Hello and welcome to The Hearing, our music review show here on the channel. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's album, we've got some feedback from 2 weeks ago, our review of Among the Living by Anthrax. I completely forgot to check the comments before recording last week because I didn't expect to get YouTube comments yet.
But we don't get alerted to those, do we?
I have to be logged in, and I'm normally logged into my account, not the not our account. But John Phillips, in the comments on that YouTube video, said, I hate to be a snob about this, but Eddie Kramer engineered albums for Led Zeppelin, the Stones, and as far as producing Hendrix, only albums released after his death. Eddie also produces albums for Kiss. In a later comment, he said, I hope I didn't come off as a comic book guy from The Simpsons. Not at all, John. I appreciate being corrected.
Sick reference, though.
Oh, yeah. That didn't come off condescending at all. I appreciate being corrected if I'm factually wrong, so thank you for that. And on to this week's album, which is from 1978, Atlanta Stamour by The Police. The Police were a British rock band best known for Sting, let's be honest. Formed in London in early 1977 by American drummer Stuart Copeland, English bassist and vocalist Gordon Sting Sumner, and Corsican guitarist Henri Padovani, Copeland had previously played in the British progressive rock band Curved Air, and after they split up, he felt inspired by the punk rock movement and was eager to put together a new band. He knew Sting from his time in the jazz rock fusion band Last Exit, and the duo recruited Padovani and formed The Police. Later that year, they added English guitarist Andy Summers, who is a decade older than Sting and Copeland, and was
Holy
already
shit.
Yeah. Summers is a decade older than the other two. He's in his mid-70s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he was already a veteran of the industry, having played with Eric Burdon, John Lord, Joan Armatrading, David Essex, among others. Padovani was fired in that August, cementing the band's final lineup. They recorded 5 albums together before going on hiatus in 84, and then briefly reconvening in 86 to play 3 concerts and attempt to record a new album. Unfortunately, Stuart Copeland broke his collarbone in a fall from a horse. So they only ended up recording an updated version of Don't Stand So Close to Me. That was the last thing they recorded.
So wait a minute, was it that 85 version really slowed down?
That was the last thing they recorded.
Was brutal.
And then they reunited in 2007 for a tour, but once again split up the next year as soon as the tour ended. I'm not going to say this for a fact, but from everything I've gathered, Copeland and Sting hate each other. Because Sting has worked with Summers.
Yeah.
A number of times since then. I think Summers was kind of the middleman of all of it.
Yeah.
But those two were just at each other constantly. It was Davies. What were the two brothers from Oasis?
The Gallagher brothers.
Gallagher's. It was that kind of a deal.
One wanted to be a Beatles cover band or tribute band. The other wanted to smash watermelons.
Mm-hmm. But it was, they just constant tension between those two. Anyway, Atlanta Stamour is the band's debut album, and it features what is undoubtedly their most famous song, Roxanne.
Yeah.
It was released on November 2nd, 78, produced by The Police, and features Sting on bass guitar, lead and background vocals, saxophone, harmonica, and butt piano. I'll explain that later. Andy Summers on guitar, backing vocals, spoken vocals, and piano. Stuart Copeland on drums, percussion, and backing vocals. And additional musician Joe Sinclair on piano. On to the tracks. Reminder, I don't edit any songs into our videos for copyright reasons, but down in the description and on our blog at johnandscotto.com, you'll find links to find Atlanta Stamour on Spotify and YouTube, so you can listen along if you'd like. On to track 1. Next to You. Despite being essentially a love song, Andy Summers and Stuart Copeland initially felt the lyrics were neither aggressive nor political enough for their style at the time. But Sting was adamant about keeping the song as it is. It includes a slide guitar solo that Copeland dismissed initially as old wave. But I love that it opens up with a punk song.
Right. And I mean, it's probably the catchiest, of the punk songs that they did on this.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a good way to start the album off.
Mm-hmm. And it really kind of gives us the first evidence of how textural Andy Summers gets with his playing.
Yeah.
The way he overlaps some of the guitar parts. And also, I love how the vocals overlap in the chorus.
For me, though, the star of this and pretty much the entire album is actually Stewart.
Oh,
like his drums.
I will be gushing about Stewart Copeland.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys I don't really think about. And I don't think he ever gets the love he deserves. He deserves to be worshipped like Neil Peart does.
Right.
I think he is a very, very close second to Neil for my favorite drummer of all time. Even top Neil.
I mean, some of the work he's done outside of the Police, amazing. I mean, he was, he played drums for Peter Gabriel, like Red Rain with that, that hi-hat in the beginning and then the whole...
Well, he is a master of the hats.
Hats
and cymbals. If it is thin and metal, Copeland goes for that first. But back to next to you real quick. Love the slide solo. Just a really nice contrast to have this slide solo on a punk song. And back to Copeland, the drums in the last verse.
Yeah.
He really kind of steps up at that point and dominates the song, which is great.
I mean, Sting, as far as... I think he really, on this album in particular, abused the crutch of repetition is the best way to put it.
The fade is too long, and they fall guilty of this a lot. It's really my ongoing criticism of the album.
Yeah.
Their songs, they don't know when to end a song. They just keep repeating and repeating at the end.
I mean, it was bad on this one, but nowhere near as bad as, say, the next track.
It gets so well. They kind of make it a little interesting on the next one. On to track two, So Lonely. This is one of my favorites. It just goes straight to the reggae, which is the other side of their sound. It's punk and reggae and a little bit of prog. That's kind of what the Police were. Love the muted guitar and the minimal bass. Sting gets a lot of credit as a singer songwriter, and say what you will about in his songs, but he is one of the greatest bass players of all time.
He has some good moments on this album, but
if you look at his work in general, he is one of the greats. Check out Dead End Job, if you want something fast. But he is brilliant at the minimal, just playing the right notes at the right time. There is an art to that, and Sting is a master of it.
But yeah, I found this one to just be way too. I mean, I've heard it before. But of course, I mean, there's a handful of tracks that you definitely hear.
There's three that you have heard repetitively on this album.
And this one, it's just way too repetitive. And when they slow it down, I just find that kind of embarrassing because it's kind of like this lounge lizard punk that he's getting into vocally.
And at the end, I kind of like the breakdown at the end.
It's kind of a harbinger of, what Sting is going to become later on.
But I say I love the punk, kind of punkish. They go kind of punk in the chorus after this reggae, which is a really nice change of pace. The reggae section, the hi-hats are brilliant. Like, that is where we get the first dose of what Stewart Copeland is going to pioneer.
Yeah.
He's just working the hi-hats. Like the lead work in the second verse between the solos. And he almost kind of shreds on the solo.
Yeah.
Which is interesting for Summers because he isn't a shredder. He's not that kind of player. The harmonica was an interesting kind of weird choice.
Oh, right. Yeah, it was kind of like, okay.
And then we get this breakdown at the end that I personally like. I like the groove of it. You thought it was a little cheesy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those, lounge acts where they try to do the call and response almost when they do have an audience. Mm. And you could tell he was thinking of that.
Yeah. And I will admit, yes, he also, once again, goes on too long at the end. That is, I think, almost every song I have that note on.
Well, yeah, none of these songs should be over 3 minutes.
Right, right.
Agreed. Almost five. And it's like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Could you imagine any other punk band like, oh, yeah, we're going to do like a...
Well, bear in mind, Copeland played in a prog band before this.
Yeah.
Sting played in a fusion band before this. They were not punkers.
They were trying for it, though.
They were prog heads trying to play punk.
Yeah.
I mean, Summer's background is jazz as well. And just to show what a genius he is, his first album outside of the band was a collaboration with Robert Fripp.
All right.
He's on that level. So you have very skilled musicians trying to play very simple music. Of course, they're going to get super, self-indulgent. On to track three, Roxanne.
It's now, hard to be critical,
It's when difficult to come into this one with fresh ears because it is right. So well known.
It's like, I'm going to gonna listen to like the national anthem or something and try to read the musically.
Bit of trivia, though. During the recording, Sting accidentally sat down on a piano in the booth, or in the sound room, in the recording booth, resulting in the atonal chord and the laughter at the beginning of the track.
And you can hear it.
Oh, like, yeah.
Pretty clearly.
And I never knew what that was. That it's kind of because it adds this interesting the piano tone. Harmonic move to this static guitar chord, and then it goes a little down and then back up to the static guitar chord. And I always thought that was intentional. It's a fascinating harmonic move. That was a complete accident because he sat on the piano. And I just thought it was just kind of this weird, sinister laugh at the beginning. I never thought it was an accident until recently. I knew that before prepping this episode, but it hasn't been that long. It was maybe a few months ago. Again, great minimal bass.
This piano. Could be Sting's best. I think, well, that could be. It is.
It's his best vocals.
Best vocals on the album, definitely.
Yeah, I'll give you that. There's another part where it gets a little more interesting, but this is probably his strongest vocal.
I mean, is it really the strongest song, though? I don't know.
If you forget that you've heard it a billion times, it's a good song.
Yeah.
I
mean, they're borrowing from Reggae Axe here, of course, a lot. And I thought the lyrics, thinking about it critically, he's just trying too hard with this, He's going for the shock value of singing about the prostitute.
Right.
But not in like the Guar sense of shock value or punk, any other punks where they're just in your face about it.
Right.
He's just not committing enough to it. No. He's trying to still be dainty and gentlemanly about it.
But Copeland does amazing things with the hi-hats and cymbals.
Yeah.
Love how the bass just anchors the whole song, even into the chorus. It just, everything kind of follows from the bass. Great groove in verse two, because that's when the drums get interesting. Copeland has a tendency to hang back in the first verse and then make it interesting in the second and the third. And it's just very simple. Two verses, two choruses. Does once again go on too long at the end.
That's true. I mean, at least this one is, only a little over three, but I mean, they can easily trim that down even.
And we've gotten into this early, I think last year we mentioned this early on, where I have a tendency not to listen to entire songs when I'm listening for my own enjoyment. When I'm reviewing, I have to listen to the whole song, of course. There is, I think, on the Smithereens, one of our first episodes, there was a whole bit at the end of the song that I'd never heard before, even though I'd listened to that album many, many times, because I just don't listen to whole songs. Once it gets into a repetition at the end, I stop it and move on to the next song. So it never bothered me before, all that repetition, because I just never bothered listening to it. Having to listen to it for this review, it really became obvious.
Well, right. It's like he didn't want to write any more lyrics. Or he came across a couple lines that he liked together, and he just figured, we'll just fill the rest of the song up with that. I don't need to write anymore. It was pretty lazy songwriting, I thought.
Or just the chorus at the end, repetitively, Roxanne put out the red light. Or put on the red light, whatever the line is.
Well, he just liked that, put on the red light, Roxanne.
And apparently they wrote it in a red light district somewhere. On to track four, Hole in My Life, one of the lesser known songs from the album. Love the flange guitar, and the drum part is brilliant. Kind of mix, just some really great stuff with the toms and the snare, mixing them together.
It starts out like a song from Chicago, that that little like anybody know what time it is kind of thing.
love how the bass moves the harmony along. And then there's this dramatic chord when it goes into the chorus. Because it's this kind of reggae-ish, but kind of downbeat verse. And then there's this great change going into the chorus, very dramatic chord leading into it. Love the harmonies on the line. It leaves me vulnerable. I hate this disease.
Stewart's drums again.
Oh, yeah.
He dominates. Can't say enough about it. Because this just gets super repetitious, too.
The yeah part before the solo, again, a little too much repetition. Loved the kind of minimalist off-kilter guitar solo, because that's what Summers does well, where he'll just pick this bizarre chord and just hammer on it for a while and just kind of move it around a bit. Love how the piano part adds tension. That's Joe Sinclair. That's one of the songs he played on, not Stenger or Andy Summers. Love the high bass accents on the chorus out. Again, every fucking track, just too much repetition at the end. On to track 5, Peanuts. This was co-written by Sting and Stuart Copeland. Most of the songs are written by Sting on his own. Two songs were co-written, this one by Copeland as well.
Yeah, I feel like this one's more interesting. Like, I mean, the jazz, I use that in air quotes, jazz in the middle, is, I don't know if it's bad or if it's just...
Well, the saxophone, I wouldn't call that jazz, but yeah. This was written about Rod Stewart. The lyrics were meant as an expression of disappointment on Sting's part toward his former idol, of whom he said, "I used to be a great fan of his, but something happened to him. I hope I don't end up like that." Having since experienced the celebrity lifestyle himself, he no longer identifies with the song's lyrical content and has changed his view on Rod Stewart.
He has, in fact, turned into Rod Stewart, definitely. Kind of, yeah. In fact, didn't they do something together?
I don't know.
Didn't they do that All for One song?
I kind of lost interest in Rod Stewart in the 80s.
Like, wasn't it Brian Adams, Sting, and Rod Stewart?
No, the song from the Robin Hood movie. Was it?
No, I think it was The Three Musketeers, or maybe it was...
One of those movies, yes. I remember
I have to look it up. But the three of them...
You're right. I forgot about that song.
I could have sworn Rod Stewart was on that.
He might have.
With Sting.
Right, yeah. While you look that up, this is another one of my favorites. Love the bass line. This is the first, song where he doesn't get just minimal and simple. He really drives the song. Kind of punk, but a bit more complex.
Yeah, it's horrendous. It's Brian Adams, Sting, and Rod Stewart together for a Three Musketeers movie from 93, which I don't
see, even... that was the problem.
It can't even say 90s. I remember.
Because all three of them were good in the 80s. You know, I loved Reckless, Brian Adams. Rod Stewart, Infatuation, Sting with the Police in the 80s. You know, all three of them were great, you know, a decade earlier.
Rod Stewart was better in the 70s, though.
Well, he better in the 70s, but yeah, fair. But he was still interesting in the 80s when he was working with Jeff Beck. Anyway, the guitar solo, Peanuts, he actually properly shreds. Andy Summers shreds, which is a very rare thing. And then we get the saxophone out of nowhere.
Yeah, I haven't decided whether it's bad or interesting.
I've heard this album. I love this album. I've heard it many, many times. So I've gotten used to it, and I really enjoy it just because of the sheer weirdness and just the fact that he then starts yelling peanuts.
Right. I'm not sure I understand that entirely either. Like a stadium vendor yelling peanuts.
I don't think there is anything to understand, or maybe there is some reference that I don't know.
Yeah.
I just love the sheer weirdness of it.
Yeah, like I said, it is definitely one of the more interesting songs on the album, that's for sure.
And it ends with just the sax on its own. On to track 6, Can't Stand Losing You, the third of the songs that everyone knows from this album.
I'd pick this one as my strongest.
Okay, interesting. Great groove. We get more reggae.
Yeah.
But it's a little sinister this time. There's this kind of synth underneath that kind of adds tension to it. I love the snare and tom hits in the second verse. It's not just the snare. It's a mix, but I think it's a floor tom. Really interesting sound. There's a great breakdown before the bridge.
I think it's Sting's best lyrics on this. Maybe even of all.
Interesting. I'm not too sure how I feel about the whole suicide angle. You know, as someone with mental health issues, it's kind of feels a little trivializing because you write that about a breakup. But, you know, quibbling, you know, different time, you know.
Right. And it does leave you asking, like, is he really, you know, suicidal, or is he just putting this on for this girl?
That's true. Yeah. That's a good point. This is the first real evidence of how textural Summers can get. Yeah. He really breaks out the kind of odd textures and kind of volume swells and things he did in later songs.
I feel this is where it really comes together, you know, like all the sounds that they're trying to mix in other, you know, songs between reggae, punk, and jazz. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this really, I mean, if there was one Police song that I had to play to demonstrate their sound, I'd choose this one.
This is for choice. On to track 7, Truth Hits Everybody. This is another favorite of mine. Again, another lesser known song.
Yeah.
Love the vocal melody. I like hearing Sting's lower register on this one. It's interesting to hear him go a bit lower because he's normally up here in the tenor range, like on Roxanne. And there's this bell-like guitar tone, which I find fascinating. The guitar sounds on this are fascinating. Great insistent drum part on the beginning of the chorus because it's almost blast beats.
Right.
And then there's, I don't know if it's a guitar or percussion on the solo where it's just this bell sound.
I think the Offspring covered this, which...
I saw something about a cover.
It's not very surprising because it is a very Offspring-like song. You know, you could definitely see them taking this.
I should look that up.
And their sound from them.
Yeah. Just a good, simple song.
Yeah.
Track 8, Born in the 50s. This is my choice by picture weakest. Yours as well?
I think this could be one of the worst songs we've done for this show.
And this, I don't know if I go that far.
Oof, this is brutal.
And it's interesting because it's a lull just before the album gets really fucking interesting.
Like, it's the first, we've done songs where I was like, oh, you know, I don't think I like that one. This is the first song I can honestly come out and say, I hate it.
Wow.
I don't think I've said that on this show about a song.
No.
I mean, there's stuff that just didn't do it for me, but this is just, this is just like that late career Billy Joel, but I mean, it's just that baby boomer navel gazing.
It's
terrible.
Nostalgia run amok is what I have in mind.
Right. And it's too early for nostalgia, guys. I mean, come on. You're only like in your 20s at this point.
Yeah, true. Or maybe pushing 30.
But like, what the fuck? I mean, it's just, I mean, it's like the Cold War kids, you know, and Billy Joel song, you know, it's oof.
On the positive side, nice jangly guitar tone. And I like how the guitars kind of overlap in the verse. Bridge is a nice change of pace. That's all I have to say about it.
It's very Who influenced.
Yeah.
Like this and the next song are both kind of like Who tributes, I feel like. This is, you know, the kids are all right kind of Who.
Fair. Yeah, I can hear that.
Which leads us to our next one.
Here, track 9, because that's enough of Born in the 50s.
Yeah.
Be My Girl - Sally, co-written by Sting and Andy Summers. I wonder who wrote what. Andy Summers wrote the really interesting songs that pop up once in a great while. This one, Mother, and Mother from Synchronicity, Someone to Talk To, which came out a little later, opens up with this kind of palm-muted riff, just very ahead of its time, very 80s.
Yeah.
And this very kind of twee, Will You Be My Girl chorus, which is with a nice high harmony.
Yeah, it's a very like Tommy, you know, Who here.
Yeah. Kind of twee, very typical Sting. And then this really interesting chord hits. And then we get Andy Summers on full blast. The full Summers. A poem about a blow-up doll. With this atonal piano that was played by Summers.
Which I could totally hear the Who doing, too.
Yeah, that's fair. and the just spoken vocal, and I don't know, I haven't heard him speak enough to know if this is his normal accent or if he was affecting an accent. I loved his delivery on the line in a special magazine.
Yeah.
He's just going on about this blow-up doll, and it's just hilarious because, you know, he's talking about having a relationship with a blow-up doll.
Right, about where they're bouncing and stuff. Yeah.
I also loved the line early on, I could only get unconscious if I'd had too much to drink. Guy who's just totally down on his luck, buys a blow-up doll, falls in love. There are also kind of whale sounds at the end, which, even as many times as I've heard it, always strike me as odd. It's probably just Sting at the upper, complete upper end of his register impersonating a whale, but it's just odd.
You sure it's not a guitar work? Like
it's not, I don't think it's Gilmore. A guitar. I'm pretty sure that's Sting. On to track 10, my favorite, probably my favorite Police song, period, Masako Tanga. This is just an amazing groove.
Yeah, this could be Summers and Sting's best work, I think.
And it's particularly Sting, because this is where he shows his chops. I went on about him being one of the greatest bassists of all time. This is where this bass part breaks my brain. I mean, I think it's multiple parts layered, but still, the speed he shows, because most of what you're hearing on that riff is bass.
Yeah.
Summers backs it up, and he plays that sort of static chord in the background.
Right.
It's mostly Sting. Love the rhythm of the vocal. It's just this chanted mountain, kind of gibberish vocal.
Yeah.
And even though the groove never really changes, it never bores me.
Right. This one violates the rules I had established earlier about, you know, nothing going over, what did I say, 3 or 4 minutes?
Yeah.
This one almost hits 6, but it's not too long. I mean, they can groove with this for a while.
This is just the jam. This is like jam band stuff where they just fall into this groove.
Right.
And it just, the hi-hat work is amazing. I have rototoms. I know they're not rototoms. Those are they're just heads. It's the toms that are long and skinny. It's those drums. I don't remember the name. I think Copeland helped kind of invent them. Incidentally, from what I was reading, he invented the splash cymbal. That's how fucking revolutionary he was.
Really? But
yeah, he does some amazing work on those toms. And these are these kind of backward sounds that fade in and out. This is where I have that Copeland should be just as worshipped as Neil Peart. Sting is worshipped as a bass player among bass players. Most people just think of him as this annoying singer-songwriter. And Stewart Summers has always been a little under the radar.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're a guitar player, you don't appreciate Andy Summers. Because he's not a showy player, aside from shredding a few songs here. But this is just, I was dancing too much to really take proper notes on this one. Because this is, one of my favorite songs of all time. And it's just because of that groove and that bass work and those drum parts.
Yeah, like, this is where the repetition works. Mm-hmm. Lyrically, it doesn't work. But well,
it's just kind of nonsense, and it's just it doesn't make any sense.
This is so rhythmic, and that's what repetition's used for, you know.
And it's used
for establishing a rhythm,
exactly. And it's kind of African sounding.
Yeah, you
know, they break out of the reggae on this one. They go for kind of an African sound, and it's just this amazing groove that they just keep going. What was it? 6 minutes? You said
almost.
Yeah, it's just brilliant, and it's simple, and it's just right. And it's a beautiful way to end the album.
Yeah.
Do you recommend it?
Oof, I'm close, but yeah, I'll recommend this one. I think there's...
All right, just too much repetition is the only thing holding you back?
Yeah. Just skip the Born in the 50s maybe, listen to it John style.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yeah, when they start getting repetitions at the end, when they get into that chorus out. And that's my rule, is when it gets to a chorus out, I stop. Because I know what's going to happen.
I mean, you see, I always listen to albums, and I've always been an album person. A lot of the times it's for driving, you know.
Okay, yeah, well, when you're driving, you have no choice.
Like, you know, I think that was the thing with the Mars Volta album. Like, I was listening to that at a time where I was taking, like, 2.5-hour drives, like, every day. Perfect time for that album. And so, yeah, you just throw that on, and you're driving through space. You're no longer on the Garden State Parkway.
I would have liked that album a lot more if I was driving and listening to it. But obviously, I recommend it. I've loved this album for decades. I've listened to it a billion times. Almost all of it is brilliant. Again, skip Born in the 50s. Yes. This is the first time we've agreed on the weakest.
Maybe. That's just a bad song, though. There's no getting around it.
Even Roxanne is great if you forget you've heard it a billion times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It is a very good song.
Yeah, just stop it on the chorus out. Skip Born in the 50s. You will love this album.
Yeah.
And that is it for Atlantis D'Amour. Until next time, we will be reviewing Fantasies by Metric. That will be interesting because I've only skimmed it, and it is the only Metric I've heard.
Well, yeah, this time I figure we just go with the popular album, since we've tried it with, you know, like the post.
Yeah.
That and we're going with the album that they're known for.
Yeah, we've tried the kind of controversial album with Arcade Fire. Which is interesting, but yeah, let's go with the popular one. And we're kind of bringing it down, because last week we had, you know, hardcore punk. We had, you know, this is kind of a step toward pop. After Metric, we're reviewing Yannicka, who are just straightforward pop rock. I posted an older version of a song that's going to be on the Yannicka album on our Twitter and Facebook, the John and Scotto accounts, because it was in my head, and I'm kind of really looking forward to that review. That's going to be a great week for me, Yannicka, and anime again. But until then, next week we've got Metric, we've got Fantasies by Metric, and of course, always, until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are. Hello and welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B Movie and Cult Movie. Wow, wrong show. Haven't done that in a while. It's like, I don't think we've had an outtake on the hearing yet.
I'm like, wait a minute, we just fucking did that. We're not doing that again.
No, especially not with that movie.
Take two. Right. Zombie Takeout.
One, two, three.